The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE, and the world. Yes, and the world. Because you can listen to us in so many different ways. On our app, online, you name it. Live, podcast, all over the place. All right, I just love this story. Oprah Winfrey responded Monday to an Instagram user who called out the billionaire for not paying off student loans after her commencement speech at Colorado College, in an apparent comparison to investor Robert Smith's now famous gesture at Morehouse College. She was told that she should have paid off the student debt and swiftly responded, pointing out her multi-million dollar donations through the years to help university students. So I just went through, there was over 8,000 comments, but I went through, just scanned through here in over the break, probably 50 to 75. Of them, mostly complimentary of her, and then little back and forth between people stating, you know, what billionaires' obligation should be, but most are complimentary. But what do you expect? That's going to be the next thing, right? If you were a billionaire, you had to make the money some way. You had to do something in the world to get to that point. All right, before we get to your calls and comments and a couple of other topics or that the poll on socialism, I just want to make sure I address this. Did you? Because now is the time. I mean, it's graduation time. And one of the stories out yesterday was Apple CEO Tim Cook and his message for 2019 graduates. My generation has failed you. He spoke to the graduates of Tulane University in New Orleans. He stepped up to the podium. His message for Tulane graduates became the very opposite of what was expected of him. Instead of presenting himself as a role model for the young graduates, in the audience, Cook encouraged them to challenge older generation successes and to find their own. In some important ways, my generation has failed you, Cook said. We spend too much time debating, too focused on the fight, and not enough on progress. Mr. Cook is absolutely wrong. This is what you will hear from somebody. And by the way, he did bring up climate change as something that they should have, you know, we should have not fought on it and we should have done something. And then they bring up the point that, and it is New Orleans and New Orleans floods. That's not climate change. That's where you built it. But he says, in some important ways, my generation has failed you. We spend too much time debating. You should have spent more time debating. You know what's destroyed the futures for our generation? Consensus. Consensus on spending more than we bring in that will eventually harm future generations severely. I wish that we would have spent much more time debating and less time on the consensus in Congress to do the wrong thing. So I disagree with Tim Cook completely. The worst things that we have done for future generations is the consensus of previous generations on policies that are stupid and dumb and are a far overreach of what the federal government should ever have been doing. But Tim Cook is saying, well, you should have taxed more and spent money on climate change. Wrong. We've stated this before.
Well, the fact is we haven't. The problem is we've spent too much time debating.
No, the problem is we've agreed on too much. And what we agreed on too much was spending what we don't have. So there you go. I just wanted to address that. Here's the latest poll on socialism. 4 in 10 Americans embrace some form of socialism. Now, this is the best part of it. Are you ready for this? Because this is the best part ever. Previous Gallup research shows that Americans' definition of socialism has changed over the years. How can you do a survey on socialism when the majority of people who believe it's a good thing, from what I can tell here, don't even know what socialism is? 25% now associate the concept of socialism with social equality. And 17% associated with more the classic definition of having some degree of government control over the means of production. Well, you don't even know what it is. With one in four not even having any idea what social what it is to begin with. Wow. That's really amazing. Well, this makes this survey completely useless, doesn't it? As we have said. And what are they like? Socialism is social equality. You're helping people. See? What we like is the gimmeism of socialism. We don't like the takeyism. We don't discuss the takeyism. We just discuss the gimmeism. Tim Cook. Speaking before the graduates of Tulane. Tim Cook is talking about the gimmeism and not the takeyism. When we had the discussion on socialism yesterday, again, it was on the gimmeism. The people that called to defend socialism, even though they gave the wrong examples and did not give example of socialism, but gave example of social welfare states. But they focused on the gimmeism and not the takeyism. They didn't bring up that in those countries that have a higher social welfare system, there's more takeyism from the middle class. The middle class has fewer choices and less money because the government controls what their choices are because they take their money. And the private sector doesn't exist in those areas, which would give them choice. But the callers yesterday who defended bigger social welfare states, if not necessarily socialism completely, because they didn't seem to understand the countries that they were using as an example, that these countries were not fully socialist, that they had free markets, just a bigger nanny state. But even in the nanny state, they did not recognize or did not want to even bring up. They bring up the gimmeism part of it, what you got, not the takeyism part of it, what you take from people to provide the gimme. Using those words and the one I made up, the takeyism, makes it more fun to discuss socialism, doesn't it? Really? When you think about it. So one in four Americans embrace some form of socialism, and form is the fact that we have different definitions for it. Does the left have to change a definition of everything? Today, 43% believe socialism is good, 51% believe it's bad. In 1942, 25% believed it was good, 40% bad, 34% no opinion. Let me see. The question was asked, during the next 50 years, do you think most of the nations of the world will have a democratic government, a communist government, or a socialist government? In 1949, 72% said Democrat, 14% said Socialist, 9% said Communist. In 2019, 57% said Democratic, 29% Socialist, 6% Communist, and 8% no opinion. What would you prefer, to have the free market or government primarily responsible for what happens in each of the following areas? Are you ready? Technological innovation. Should it be free market or government? 75% say free market. 19% say government. The distribution of wealth. Should the government be primarily responsible for that or the free market? 68% free market, 28% government. The economy overall, 62% believe it should be free market, 33% the government. Wages, 62% government, 62% free market, 35% government. Higher education, this is really interesting, since you have had a number of Democrat candidates come out and say, oh, charter schools would be gone under me. Higher education, 56%. Now, I guess higher education would be more college. I don't know if that's how they viewed it. But 56% said free market, 41% government. Healthcare, free market, 53%, government, 44%. Protecting consumers' privacy online, 40% free market, 57% government. Environmental protection, 30% said free market, 66% said government. Notably, Americans favor free market than government control over healthcare and higher education, two areas in which Democrat politicians have made proposals to greatly expand government involvement. But at least 4 in 10 Americans appear sympathetic to policies that would increase the government's role in those areas. Remember, everything, though, based on when we talk about it, even all of this, nobody talks about the reality, even in this poll here. Nobody talks about, are you willing to pay for it? Would you be willing to pay higher taxes to get more government involvement in it? Nobody asks those questions. That's why we've stated over and over again, we are not becoming, people in this country do not want socialism, they want gimmeism. Why? Because they don't like the takeyism of socialism. A word we have made up on tonight's show that will ensure Eric, since he watched that movie about the creation of the Oxford Dictionary and one of the concerns, always having to add new words, that one should be added. Takeyism. So there you go. Your calls and comments coming up next, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Road check is a critical aspect of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance's strategy for keeping our highways safe. This year, the Inspection Blitz will take place June 4th through the 6th and will focus on steering and suspension systems. Start preparing for road check now with the following safety tips. Make sure you have no visible fluid leaks anywhere in the steering system. Inspect suspension components such as U-bolts, airbags, and mounting, springs, and all suspension mounting hardware. Lastly, listen for any air leaks in the air ride suspension. Take your road check prep one step further. Stop into a participating TA truck service May 1st through June 6th for a free mid-trip inspection to help avoid being placed out of service.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
He is Eric Cronin. He has a morning off. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Frank in San Antonio. Frank, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
I just caught part of your conversation. I've heard a lot of people complain that it's like we have socialism for the big corporations, and like EIG or AIG got bailed out by the government, and the taxpayers are paying for it. They have socialism for the big corporations, but... they're killing the middle class businessmen or middle class farmers.
Well, you're forgetting one thing. Why did the banks get bailed out?
Well, they got rid of the regulation.
No.
You're forgetting.
What created the whole thing? Why did it fail?
Because they got rid of Glass-Steagall. They lost and get rid of
Glass-Steagall. No, wrong. Absolutely wrong. It failed because the government got into the mortgage business. That's the socialism that created it. The government decided to get in, and the government would create Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and they would, the government would subsidize with taxpayer dollars the mortgage industry in this country, that the government got involved in mortgages.
I think the bankers wanted to have a bubble. That's why they gave the loans out.
You don't understand economics, Frank. Nobody wanted the bubble is created because the government, when you give free money, it's the same. Why do you think college is skyrocketing? Greenspan's
PhD was
all right. You're all over the place again. I'm telling you, with liberals, you just can't have a conversation with anything anymore. The whole thing happened because the government got involved in the mortgage business. When easy money exists, the prices skyrocket of that product. It's happened with college. It happened in the mortgage industry. When easy money was available because the government said, okay, you want a loan, you can get one, and we'll put it on the backs of the taxpayers. That's what created the whole thing. So, yeah, you're right. It was all a socialist program, and it's a program now that the Trump administration now wishes to expand. After we made the mistake once, we brought this to you just about 3 weeks ago, Trump administration signed off to make loans easier now for people that don't qualify. And put it on the taxpayer back again. But nobody complains when it happens. They're all for it until it all falls apart, which, of course, it's going to fall apart, and it will eventually fall apart again. But we don't get angry when we put the money in. We only get angry when we have to bail it out at the other end, which is expected. It is going to happen. It was predicted again by the same man that predicted in 1999 that we would have a huge bank problem in a decade. He predicted it. It happened. That same man predicted it just a month ago, because the Trump administration is now doing the same thing, starting to go down the same path as what happened in the Clinton administration. The government getting involved in mortgages. The government saying, okay, we're going to back you in mortgages that are more risky so you can have the home and live in the home that you wish to live in. So that's what creates it all. You seem to be, like most liberals, just all over the place. It's almost as if your view of economics is based on talking points. Because, again, you're just all over the place. I'm telling you, folks, it's impossible to talk to a liberal today. It is absolutely impossible. It's as if the synapses are just firing off every single direction, and you get no coherent discussion with them. And you ask him a question, and it's just boom, 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 boom. Okay, this talking point that existed 8 years ago, just going to blurt it out. It's like no understanding of how the issues work. Just my mind is loaded with talking points. And when you ask me a question, I'll just blurt one of them out, whether it has anything to do with answering your question or not. You want the frustrating part of talk radio today? That is the frustrating part of talk radio. You start having a conversation, you realize, oh, I can't have any type of conversation. It is absolutely impossible, because they have an opinion, but they have no idea what's actually going on. And they're happy that way. They're not angry. They'll lose an argument and use the same argument again in 5 minutes. They get shot down, doesn't matter, use the same argument again 5 minutes later. You know why? They see their members of Congress doing the same thing. So why would they think that they have to change at all? I'm telling you, that's the most frustrating part of it. People really, 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 really don't know how things work at all. That's why Ocasio Cortez. That's why you have leadership of the Democrat Party. That's why you have 11 of the presidential candidates endorsing absolute insanity. They're clueless, too. Why shouldn't their followers be? Or
pockets of civilization, you can listen live on our app, in your app store, or RedEyeRadioShow.com. Red Eye.
Again? Okay. Apparently Chris is not there. We had maybe we got some problems here. We'll see if we can get that corrected. Hang on. Couple of comments here, people, because we've been talking about the candidates in general. We're talking about the Democrats. We had mentioned Biden earlier and got a couple of comments. First off, that the Democrats running right now, it's about gimmeism. When we talk about socialism, you hear a bunch of them running. A couple of comments about Biden hasn't said anything, and that's true. Biden hasn't said anything, but one of the reasons Biden hasn't said anything is because the goal seems to be for him to wait until everybody else fails, and then he'll see what the polls say, and then that's where he's going to go. The other thing that I've noticed is, and we had this one comment saying, the Democrats scream about white men, yet the white men are leading dominant. If you take the numbers, they're over 50%. And the white women really aren't the women, not just white, but the women aren't doing good at all. Why not? There's a ton of different articles. Just put that into Google. Why women are polling so low in the Democrat Party? Look at the number of articles that come up from the liberals talking to analysts about how misogynist and bigoted Democrats are. Seriously, I mean, it's amazing. Kirsten Gillibrand said the same thing last week when talking about why she's not polling high. Blamed it on sexism. Eric and I brought it up and said, wow, can you believe it? Kirsten Gillibrand saying, well, they're only voting for the men because our party is sexist. It's gender bias. It's sexism. It's misogyny. But it's the Democrat primary. And we just find it the most amazing thing that you have the women that are running right now stating that Democrats, as she wrote here, I think people are generally biased against women. It's a Democrat primary. Everybody being polled is a Democrat. They're not polling Republicans. And the number of articles that are being written on this are just amazing. And they're going to, and here's the thing. When you read these articles, you're like, nobody's talking about, they talk in general, well, the sexism that exists in our society. But what they're forgetting is everybody, and I go through these articles saying, wait a minute, what they're not talking about, the fact is, this isn't the general population. This isn't Hillary saying, well, in a general election, I can't win because the Republicans and the independents are all sexist and all the Democrats vote for me. This is in the primary. And it's like they have forgotten this is a Democrat primary. So if you're making that accusation, you're talking about the fact that the majority of the Democrat Party are sexist and misogynists and bigoted against women. And I don't know about you, but I find that really interesting. Article in the Washington Free Beacon that talked about her CNN interview. She's struggling. This is Kirsten Gillibrand, struggling in the polls with the low single digits and may not make the cut for the first Democratic primary debate. She's blaming sexism. I think it's gender bias, she said in the CNN interview, as reported by the Washington Free Beacon. I think people are generally biased against women. It's all Democrats. I think also biased against young women, she continued. There's just bias. It's real. It exists. but you have to overcome it. The big thing being missed here is it's all Democrats. I'm sorry if I get a kick out of it, but when they do this and don't even realize what they're saying, to me, I find it just amazing. The other thing that I wanted to mention here, I wanted to make sure that I mentioned, just because I saw all this praise for Pete Buttigieg, even saw that Brit Hume. Pete Buttigieg is the most impressive candidate maybe since Obama, Brit Hume says. And everybody on the left going crazy about him. Let me read this article from Fox quickly here. Mayor Pete Buttigieg is the most impressive candidate in terms of political talent in the current 2020 Democratic presidential field, Brit Hume said, comparing the South Bend, Indiana mayor's rise in popularity to the emergence of Barack Obama. I think Pete Buttigieg is the most impressive so far candidate in views of just raw political talent in the Democrat field. He said he may be the most impressive candidate I've seen since the emergence of Barack Obama, Hume said. You know what it is? Because if you think about it, it's like, okay, what do I find aesthetically appealing? Who can BS me better? Seriously. And I really think this is something that has to come from inside Washington. I love Brit Hume, but I look at Buttigieg and I'm like, oh, you're just BSing me in a different way. I don't find it impressive. They may find it impressive because Obama was able to win an election. Yeah, but Trump did the opposite and he won an election. So what's the point? But the left is talking about his intellect. And as I've said from the very beginning, tell me one thing where Pete Buttigieg is an intellectual on any issue. One. Tell me where he is able to see what nobody else is able to see. How is Pete Buttigieg able to explain anything? I did see the thing where he attempted to explain that only 1.3% of women have abortions after 20 weeks. And that seemed to satisfy the audience. Oh, okay, it's only a small portion. Well, it's 8,200. That's more human beings that were killed in mass shootings, as somebody went back and checked at it, since 1965. But that seemed to be a great answer. That was a great intellectual answer. And it's not an answer. It's a dumb answer. But because people like his aesthetics, because he talks, because he's able to explain, I've got it down I've got my cadence down correct. I can talk in a calm way. I look directly into the camera. I might have a voice that can project in a certain way or project concern. And you know what I say to that? I could care less. Tell me what the substance of your argument is. We said this way back in 2007 when people would say Obama is one of the most intelligent presidential candidates ever. And we said, how? Based on what? Give us one issue nobody ever could. Not one, because there isn't one. We've talked about this before. We always hear, well, we need those politicians out there to talk about how we can solve problems in a different way. There are no different ways. We know what they all are. It's either more government involvement or less government involvement. It's what it really comes down to. But Buttigieg, impressive, intelligent. How? Where? In what issue? The fact that he would like the big states to control elections? That makes him something special? Well, the Republic has failed us. We need to go to a direct democracy. Really now? So that small states don't have representation. I mean, I think that when you look at it, the founding fathers, by figuring out that the Electoral College, the Senate, by giving states and geographical regions representation in Congress, by believing in the concept that you want to prevent the tyranny of the majority from oppressing the minority, which is the entire concept of being a republic instead of a democracy, that's actually a more intelligent take. But his point was,
well, no, direct democracy, the people should vote, not states.
Oh, wow, that's really intelligent. We know that the mainstream media is going to look at who they believe is a, you know, particular hero on the left, and they will throw out accolades that are not deserved. We here on Red Eye Radio, we're a little bit tougher. You got to give us some substance. Give us some meat. There was nothing, absolutely nothing, that impressed me about Buttigieg in the Fox News town hall meeting. The answers were typically liberal. And typically about the government having more power in your life. As I said, and I'll say this again, and I'll say this for as long as we finally see if we can get one person to call over a period of weeks or months. We're being told that Buttigieg is the most intelligent person running in the Democrat primary right now. Give me one example. One. And then when you have, like I said, Britt Hume, oh, he's impressive, he's impressive. I don't find him impressive. Because I'm only impressed by the substance of your argument. And he doesn't have any. And this is why I'm so glad that I'm not inside the Beltway where these things seem to be of such critical importance. Well, he's as impressive as Obama. You thought Obama was impressive? He won. But he just found another way to BS. So you're saying political style we should now be throwing accolades at instead of saying, look, political style has failed us in the past. Let's look at the substance of the argument. No, we have to make sure that we give time to just talk about how joyful and how impressed we are of somebody's style and not their substance. Sorry. Not here on Red Eye Radio. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. Let's go to Fran in Massapequa, New York. Fran, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Love it, man. Love it. Thank you so much for the opportunity. You guys are great.
Thanks.
And I'm just very happy to be with you.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys are the best. And really quick, you know, a couple of things. The media. I mean, I just think about it sometimes, like if you guys were liars, you know, how sick it would be, you know? Like they are, the way they just don't tell the truth. I mean, you guys, you know, it's so scary, the comparison to, you know, like you guys in like that channel 2, 4, 7, 23, or 25, which is CNN, MSNBC, ABC in New York.
Eric and I admit we're biased and we tell you what our opinion is. It doesn't mean that we don't want to project what I don't want my opinion to be based on something that's false.
Right, exactly. That's it. All people want is the truth. But the thing that gets me is this. They are the biggest hypocrites in the world. And I believe it's a cult. I believe to be a Democrat, it's almost a sickness and a cult. Because it's just, think about it. Think about how the last couple of years, how anti-old man they are, how anti-white they are. They don't like old white men. They can't, white men this, white men that. They've taken everything from us. We have no opportunities. But yet, two people leading their party right now are 70 plus years old white men. I mean, it's just, they have a choice. They have a choice of 22 different people, white, black, brown, orange, yellow, pink, blue, any different color, any race. We all love everybody on the right, so it's no problem. But just goes to show you how sick they are and how much they lie and how much, today my friend falls down on his bicycle. 35 stitches, white guy. You know who's the first guy there to help him? A black male kid.
Well, yeah,
absolute sweetheart.
Right. That's because, thanks so much, we're just running out of time. That's because, again, the whole portrayal that we live in a racist nation that you hear from the Democrats is not true. the media and the media. The media wants to portray us as being a racist nation, but we're not. People help each other all the time. People don't go walking in the streets like the media does in analyzing racial relations in this country. People get along on a one-to-one individual basis, and they do it just fine and dandy all the time. But that's the thing. That does get to me. You know, I was thinking yesterday that I saw that Joe Scarborough on MSNBC Morning Joe just went through this entire thing about how impressed he was with Buttigieg. And about all the things that he was talking about, I'm thinking to myself, were you ever a Republican in any way? Because there's no conservative values at all. Nothing conservative on the issues for Buttigieg. Yet, he's talking about him as if he's the savior of the country. It's just, it's mind-boggling, the hypocrisy.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off, so it's you and me. In the news today, well, I mean, sort of typical day in D.C., right? I mean, it was really like day three or four of Republican Representative Justin Amash talking about wanting to impeach the president.
It's a process. It's not like the resolution is just drawn up overnight. It's a process, and you have to come to the right conclusions about how to draft something.
And then, of course, you've got Gerald Gavel Nadler talking about, I don't know, what, Obama, Trump being a dictator or something like that.
We're going to do what we have to do to protect the American people and to protect the rule of law. The president cannot be above the law, no more than anybody else can. And he cannot seek to be a dictator and to destroy the separation of powers and to be above the law.
And then the president out at a rally last night, responding in a way.
He had phony Russian hoaxes and witch hunts and people that hate Trump and hate you. Angry Democrats all after us with all of it. And they still have, it's like little embers that are burning. They're going crazy. Because when the Mueller report was finished, it said no collusion. They went crazy. But you know what? They knew it.
We spent the first part of the show today talking about Representative Amash from Michigan and the whole thing over the last couple of days where he is now calling for the impeachment of the president and said he has read the Mueller report. We went through already on the show. We went through everything that he wrote in his tweets and the argument that he was making, and he wasn't making any argument that hadn't been made already. There's nothing there. The only real thing that he's making different is the, because when you look at the collusion, of course there's none. He's trying to say there were other crimes, no crimes of collusion to hack the election. An obstruction of justice, the point he's made, is still has been made by Democrats and even some Republicans already, which is to make it a thought crime and not a crime of actual behavior of obstruction of justice. But what was the president thinking, even if there's no underlying crime or no crime that the president committed, to try to hide the underlying crime that never existed to begin with? His point was making the wrong premise. Amash was trying to make the premise that, well, people are saying there's no underlying crime, so there can't be obstruction of justice. That isn't the argument that people have been making. The argument they've been making is there was no underlying crime, which goes to intent. I mean, there was no underlying crime. Here's the difference. There was no underlying crime even identified. And that, nobody really talks much about that. That seems to have just not been a part of the public discourse, and it should have been. Normally, when you have a prosecutor, you have a crime. You're trying to tie somebody to a particular crime. There was never a crime identified. It was a general allegation question. Did Trump collude with the Russians to hack the election? There was never any evidence that he did. None. There was no general evidence that he ever did. There was a false dossier that came from Russian intelligence that was propaganda that they used as evidence. They tried to use as evidence, which was ridiculous. But there was never even an underlying crime. It's almost like saying police are looking for the person who robbed a store. So they go to all the stores in the country and they can't find anything, can't find Trump in there. And Trump says, look, this is a witch hunt. I'm going to fire the person doing the investigation because you went through, there is no evidence here and you still do an investigation. I'm going to fire you for this, even though you can be fired for other reasons. I'm being advised to fire you for other reasons and calling that obstruction. Especially when you have the constitutional authority to do so. There was no underlying crime, and any behavior Trump was involved with was constitutionally protected. So you're firing him for what you believe he might have been in his mind. That's a thought crime. It's ridiculous. And Amash brings nothing more than maybe, I don't know, it sounds like bitterness, to be honest with you. I can't figure it out because there's nothing different. The only thing the media is jumping on is he's a Republican making that case. But that in itself doesn't mean anything. Does he have a new argument? Is there a new legal argument? And then finally, when he talks about the fact that he believes that crimes have been committed, when he gets to impeachment, it's, well, impeachment, you actually don't need a charge of a criminal act and you actually don't need a conviction of a criminal act. You can impeach for basically anything. That's what his argument comes down to. When you actually parse through it, we didn't bring it up yesterday because I saw it and I went, there's nothing new here. And then I realized after he doubled down on it yesterday and did all the tweets and everything else, okay, we got to bring it up. I feel like I'm wasting my time because we have to go through it again. We have to use your valuable time to repeat something that we've already repeated again. And we have to repeat it because Democrats and the media are making a huge thing out of it because it's a Republican who's saying it. And I don't care whether you're a Republican or Democrat. If you don't have, again, the substance of the argument, we're going to call you on it. And he doesn't. There's nothing there. As for Nadler, who knows where he's at? Just you know what I didn't want to get, though? I did. There is a... There was a great article that was written. Hang on. I've got it here. See, Eric isn't here to bail me out and say something. there's another article that was written in the National Review that just hits exactly what I was talking about right there. And of course, I'm looking through. Here it is. Rich Lowry. It's at the bottom of the pile. Of course it is. I've got 30 stories at the bottom. The Great Misdirection. So maybe I do have something to say on Nadler. House Democrats are frustrated, very, very frustrated. Washington Post report over the weekend spelled how stymied Democrats feel and that they are considering, via the power of inherent contempt, fining or arresting people who are defying their subpoenas. This is very unlikely to happen. Obviously, a New York Times report a few days ago on Democrats' exasperation said they might consider having hearings with empty chairs. Oh, the drama. Gerald Nadler, per the Times, conceded that the White House strategy had thus succeeded in tamping down energy around the Mueller report and investigations. This misstates the dynamic, though. It's not so much President Trump as Nancy Pelosi who has succeeded in lowering the temperature around the Mueller report by taking impeachment off the table or at least pushing it off to some indeterminate point in the future. The speaker has denied Democrats their most consequential resource and limited her caucus to staging theatrical attempts to find facts that have already been found. Robert Mueller spent 2 years hunting down every possible lead related to collusion and obstruction with considerable powers and investigative resources at his disposal. He had more or less full cooperation from the White House, except he didn't get to interview the president directly. Then he wrote down everything in a 400-plus page report that Bill Barr released to Congress to do with as it chooses. Never has a House majority had so much work done for it and been so remarkably ungrateful about it. And then talked about, you know, whether they'll be able to prevail in getting Don McGahn to get his testimony. They go, but what's the point? McGahn talked extensively to Mueller, and surely everything remotely damaging is already in the report. All of this coupled with the obsessive focus on Bill Barr is a gigantic misdirection. Democrats are at their most pathetic, begging Robert Mueller to testify. They obviously hope for a compelling TV from his testimony. But after disgorging himself of an exhaustive report, what do they possibly think Mueller can tell them that he hasn't already shared, except his opinions that he shouldn't, as a prosecutor, be airing publicly? Congress has the report. Now it is up to it to decide. But it doesn't want to. It's too powerful to admit that the Mueller report was a bust. So instead, Democrats make a show of getting to the bottom of matters that have already thoroughly been investigated as anything in our recent politics. Perhaps Democrats will get so frustrated by Trump's non-cooperation that they will end up impeaching him over that, which will surely make it the first time a House majority has impeached someone over its play acting to avoid impeachment. That's actually great. That's Rich Lowry, National Review. And that's where we are. Meanwhile, on the other side of it, looking at the Obama administration and Brennan and Clapper and Comey, wow, what a zoo that is. Now everybody's afraid. Now the dossier is a hot potato. Nobody wants to hold on to it. Everybody's trying to say, no, it was you. No, it was you. No, it was you. You saw the thing that came out yesterday because of Trey Gowdy. Trey Gowdy talking about the fact that, hey, Comey had an email that he stated Brennan was the one that pushed the dossier. Brennan's testified before Congress. I didn't push any dossier, and it had nothing to do with any intelligence whatsoever. They said somebody's lying in that one right there. It's either one way or another. And then the other thing that's huge out there is Trey Gowdy, and we brought this to you yesterday, where Trey Gowdy says that the FBI informants in Papadopoulos, that the actual transcript, because they were wired, that actual transcript of what was said, that if that ever becomes public, that'll blow the roof off of this. He said, look, most people aren't good. No matter what evidence comes out, people are not going to change their minds on whether Trump colluded with the Russians, except this information is so damning, it will change minds. And then you've got Loretta Lynch saying that Comey totally mischaracterized. Remember the whole thing where he said that he was told to say that this was a matter and not an investigation? She said she never told him that. So everybody now is infighting. Everybody's trying to cover and protect their own posterior. Very interesting times that we live in. Very interesting day yesterday. Who knows what today will bring? 866-90-RED-EYE.
Well, you're going to have a cookout at a park or picnic ground. You want to cut down on the time you'll be out at that hot grill, so you decide to partially brown those chicken breasts and partially cook those ribs at home, then finish the job at the picnic. But... what? Not a good idea?
No, absolutely not.
No, Janelle Goodwin with the USDA's Meat and Poultry Hotline says doing that really increases the chances of people getting sick from that food. Why?
When you partially cook a product, you're taking it out of the refrigerator, which is a safe temperature You're bringing it up to a warm temperature, not quite done yet.
Not hot enough to kill any bacteria that may be in or on it. And then you put that nice warm meat back in the fridge, bacteria possibly still multiplying in the meat, and...
It takes a long time for the temperature to drop back down to below 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
Which would stop bacteria from growing. Then later, when you finish cooking it, it may not get hot enough to kill the bacteria, and you've put your diners in jeopardy. Not that kind of jeopardy. In Washington, Gary Crawford, U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. The other thing we spent some time talking about today is the whole the adoration for Pete Buttigieg, and that he's just an amazing candidate and so intelligent. As I've said, give me one example. And we said this about when President Obama ran in 2008, when people were saying he is the smartest president ever. We said, name one issue where he's extremely smart on. We went years, never got one person who could tell us. Maybe some tried. I don't know on what, but I don't remember. Maybe one or two people tried, but they didn't succeed. They got his position wrong or whatever, but we never got anybody over the years to be able to articulate that. Same with Buttigieg. He's incredibly intelligent and dynamic. Where is he in the substance of the issues? He's a far radical left winger. He endorses AOC. Well, we can't go as far as she does, but we need to get to 100% renewable energy. And so I have my own Green New Deal. Oh, shut up. He's for reparations. He's not for forgiving, I don't believe, all the loans, but he's for massive free college for everybody. He's as far left as anybody on the Democrat side. The issues that he believes in don't work. They're not sustainable. The money isn't there. And I'll say it about Pete Buttigieg, as we said about Obama. Tell me what makes him so intelligent. Tell me one stand on one issue that takes more intelligence than the average junior high school student has. You can't. Because it's not there. Let's go to Jim in Georgia. Jim, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Appreciate you taking my call. I was listening to you last hour talking about Mayor Pete, and you were talking about how they were saying that he was so smooth and he had a good style, and that seemed to impress everybody and ooh and a nod. Then you made reference to that's the same things he said about Obama, which is kind of what you just reiterated right now. I was just thinking, it kind of hit me. Take it to the next step. If style is so important to them to be a good person, a good leader, a good president, then the thing they hate about Trump is his lack of their satisfactory style.
Oh, yeah.
They're all over Trump because he doesn't act like a president. So if you look at what, I mean, even the most pointed head Democrat has got to say, I don't like lower unemployment rates. I don't like business in the country. I don't like the economy getting better. No. So it can't be about issues. It's only about style. And they're proving it by the way they're going after these people that have no foundation, no really platform to stand on, but they have good style.
Well, you know, when I was talking about Britt Hume saying he is, you know, the best presidential candidate since Obama, I said, well, actually, no, you'd have to make that case for Trump. There is nobody who pulled a bigger upset than Donald Trump did. So it has to be his style had to have something to do with it. How can you completely ignore Right. Go ahead.
That's the only criteria. Their only criteria is style. And that's what they prove it by. Loving Obama, loving Mayor Pete, and hating Trump, because neither one of them, Mayor Pete and Obama, don't have anything of any substance.
Great point. Thanks so much. 866-90-RED-EYE. It's time for your national forecast.
We're going to see that risk of severe weather shift today from the Texas Hill Country, Oklahoma, and portions of Kansas. A bit eastward today from northeastern Texas into Arkansas, Missouri, and portions of central Illinois. Large hail, damaging winds, potential tornadoes and thunderstorms all embedded in the system. In the west, we have a mixed bag of rain and snow. Of course, in the higher elevations of the Rockies, Sierras, Cascades, you'll see rain up and down the west coast from Seattle to at least the middle portion of California. The desert southwest is dry. East of the Rockies, we'll see rain continue for portions of the Dakotas into Nebraska and Iowa. Much of what we'll see east of the Mississippi today will be dry. We'll see a lot of cooler air pouring in from Canada thanks to some high pressure to the north, funneling in for everyone from the Midwest, Mid-Atlantic, and Northeast. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Bear, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. He has the morning off. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get into the show, we would love to hear from you. Let us go to Dane in Elkhart, Indiana. Dane, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Dane.
Good morning, Gary.
Hi.
You asked for a reason why Buttigieg should be president. Now, let me preface this with saying I want Trump to go for the full eight. Okay.
All right.
But anecdotally, I want to say that he's got the government spending down. He just bought a $600,000 boombox. It's a trailer with a radio and speakers on it that plays music so that kids can come out to the park. So if he can spend $600,000 for a boombox, certainly he's got the government or the wasteful government spending down. You know, so anecdotally, there's my answer as to why, you know, the one reason, the one and only reason why he maybe has qualifications to be the president.
I hadn't heard about it, and I'm reading it here. South Bend, $650,000 boombox criticized.
Right, but they got a deal on it. They got $50,000 off of it, you know, because, you know, they bought it quickly or whatever.
Okay, the city of South Bend is investing approximately $50 million in improvements into shared public spaces. The latest purchase of that initiative, a $650,000 mobile experimental vehicle. That number is causing controversy in the community. I think the more we can spend to get our kids outdoors to be active and be healthy in the outdoor environment, that money is well invested. Said another citizen, I don't think a boombox is a way to do it at all. You have to do it yourself. A boombox is not the best thing. Well, let me tell you, if we want to bring America together, it would take one humongous boombox. Thing is, you don't really. Here's the problem, though. You really don't need a huge boombox anymore. You don't need a trailer. With the new technology, you see some of these smaller Bluetooth speakers. You actually don't need to go that big. I understand your point, though. Thank you so much. Those against it believe the money could be used elsewhere, like education or potholes. I love this one. In a blog post posted today by the department, after we asked for a comment, this is a TV station, ABC 57 there. Boomer is being made a reality with existing staff and existing financial resources. This is to say funds that would have not otherwise been spent on potholes, schools, or public safety. That's not an excuse from government. We have the money, and we're not going to spend it there. We're going to spend it here. The vehicle is expected to have a 10-year life expectancy? Really? Why? I'm looking at the, my God, it's a boombox. It looks like, What a waste of money. I'm sorry. What a waste of money. That's a great point. Thank you for informing us on the Buttigieg boombox. We go to Daniel in San Antonio, Texas. Daniel, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. It's an honor. Just wanted to pass on some information. If you do an internet search of the fastest shrinking cities in America, South Bend is on that list. And this is the guy who wants to run our country.
Okay, I just did that when I saw your call coming up. It shows they've remained even over the, well, from 2010 to 2016, they remained about even.
Okay. It's been a while since I've looked at it, so.
Okay.
But I just thought it was interesting that, you know, he's just not, doesn't have a city that is performing and growing like our country wants to be.
Well, I mean, that I don't know, how is Indiana growing overall? But you know, that's a great point. I don't know what kind of power a mayor of a city that size actually has. I don't know their form of city government, but it would be interesting. And I'm sure you're going to have, and I think it's going to come up pretty soon, because Democrats will start attacking each other, where there will be more on actually what he has done of mayor of a relatively small town.
Yeah.
You have to understand. I mean, we're not talking about a huge city. You know, I tell you, Bloomberg must be getting a little ticked off, though. Not Bloomberg, de Blasio. Because he's in a big, big city, and everybody seems to just have ignored him. And the guy in the smaller city, they seem to be going, well, this is the guy. Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much. Appreciate your call. 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm just looking here at the... Oh, it's just, this is one of the slide things. Okay. I'm trying to look. I'm looking at the shrinking cities out there and seeing if they're on the list. Some towns I'm familiar with are on that list, but I don't see yet that they are on it. But we'll continue looking. 866-90-RED-EYE. Let us go to, let me see, who do we got here? We have Caleb in Long Beach, California. Caleb, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, Gary. How's it going?
Very, very good. Thanks for calling.
All right. Great to talk to you. I love you guys' show so much. Every night, Monday through Friday, I listen to you.
Thanks.
So about Buttigieg again, and I'm not going to be one to offer anything that he's brought to the table, but... Just saying, the obvious for me is that, kind of like you were comparing him to Obama or whatever, his appeal, I think, is because he's like the poster boy for homosexuals. And
oh, because he's gay. Well, we'll say this. Look, the left has brought it up. Eric and I have been talking about the number of articles that came out. I don't know if as many has come out over the last couple of weeks, but, I mean, there's a great debate among Democrats whether he's gay enough. And whether his gay super and whether his gay, I'm not kidding. This isn't our opinion on it. No. This is leftist magazines and political pundits looking at it. Does his white male supersede his gayness, or is he more gay than the white male? What is his biggest influence? The white male, the white gay, the gay over the. I mean, it's just Eric and I went through a couple of articles, and we were just like, this is just mind-boggling. I'm sure it's some of the appeal, for his popularity in the Democrat Party, but I'm talking more about what the media is saying about him, and even mentioning Brett Hume saying he's the best candidate, you know, since Obama, you know, because of style. Style. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. If you're just talking style, you might not have liked Trump's style, but if the style works. That's a good politician. Well, look, we said this about Trump. Some people didn't like his style, but a ton of people liked his style. There were a ton of people that didn't like Obama's style. But as we said, Trump became president because Trump did what? Trump identified the problem. He didn't necessarily have solutions to everything. Well, maybe one, the wall. But a lot of things he didn't have solutions to because he'd be all over the place on what to do about it. But he did identify the issues that Americans are concerned with. And we said the Democrats can't do it. Look, let me say this about Buttigieg. What are two of his biggest things that he's promoting all the time? Climate change and reparations. What did the Democrats do for 8 years during Obama that made sure that they lost so many seats, congressional seats, state legislative seats? And finally, the result of the Obama administration was putting Trump into office. If you listen during that 8 years, Eric and I were always amazed that they were just focused on climate change and race consistently. They never got off it. And we were amazed that every single poll that came out showed it was on the bottom of what Americans were concerned with, that Americans weren't concerned with climate change and they weren't concerned with race. You would take the 30 top topics and it would be 29 and 30 when you came up with the list. Americans didn't care. We actually thought and said, is it this bizarre that the Democrat Party actually has said, look, we don't want a manufacturing base because manufacturing pollutes. We don't want huge businesses in the country because that creates billionaires. We really don't know what we want there. We don't know how we can win that at all. So let's just talk about things and seem really concerned about things that Americans don't care about. Because if we're really concerned about things that Americans don't care about, then they'll go, oh, okay, but they seem really concerned. But it won't hurt us and it won't help us. We really came to that conclusion. And if you look at somebody like Buttigieg, what are his major issues? Go to his own website on the issues. Reparations, climate change, 100% renewable energy, climate change, green jobs, reparations. Opposite of Trump on illegal immigration. You go through all these different things, and it's your typical liberal. And my point is that it's been being made by the media that he is this incredibly intelligent person. And so I have to ask, on what issue? Trump actually won by identifying the issues. To me, that makes him more intelligent. Obama didn't win on the issues. Obama won on a concept of hope and change. So, which could have been anything. And, okay, I'll throw health care in. I'll throw health care. And I know that it was, you know, to end the wars and get out of Gitmo, but we said those weren't going to happen. And they didn't happen. But Trump won by identifying domestic problems that people were concerned about. Immigration and the economy. That's, you know, really, to be honest, to look at this, if I'm going to look at this election, I don't know where the Democrats go. I have no idea where the Democrats go in the economy. If the economy keeps going good, a caller earlier would talk about, what do you think of Biden talking about China and why is he talking about China the way he's talking about China? And I said, well, what you're going to hear from the Democrats now is the fact, I believe, that yes, we need to deal with China, but the president's doing it all wrong and our people are being hurt and we would do it the smart and correct way. What way would that be? Well, we'd get together with every, they're not going to answer it. They're going to say, we get together with and get bipartisan support to put the proper pressure on China without hurting American farmers. That's what you're going to hear. Other than that, if the economy turns good, if the economy continues to be good and accelerates because of what the president has done with, you know, that the USMCA is now going to go through, it looks like, if we got an agreement there, if we lower the tensions with the European Union, we'll see. If the economy stays good, it's still Trump's to lose. If the economy does not stay good, depending on how the tariffs that were in place, because as the Wall Street Journal pointed out yesterday, in the first quarter, investment was down. We always said the president's taking a risk. This president needs a good economy to win. If the economy isn't good, Democrats will come in and talk about, as they did before, their 5 million green jobs. And we need to have sustainable jobs and sustainable economy. They'll never explain it to you just like the Green New Deal, but they don't believe that they have to in order to win. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Shell recently launched Shell Rotella T6-15W40 Full Synthetic. Megan Pino is Shell Rotella Global Brand Manager and tells us what was behind the development and more about the product.
We are excited to launch this new full synthetic Shell Rotella T6-15W40. This is the first time we have a full synthetic in 15W40 viscosity range. We know that truckers love 15W40. That is the primary viscosity grade used in the U.S. and Canada and really in many parts of the world as well. So our customers can enjoy some of the benefits of cold temperature properties, low temperature and high temperature, allowing for the oil to flow faster into the engine and protect it better. Having a full synthetic also allows for extended drain opportunities for those that are trying to push the limits a little bit. But we always recommend following their manufacturer recommendations and doing oil analysis to ensure that they are changing when appropriate.
For more, go to Rotella.com. This engine report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. Hopefully we see Eric for tomorrow's show. New study out there claims that Democrats overreported mental stress following the 2016 election. Yep. A new study from Stanford PhD candidate and a trio of Microsoft analysts shows that many overreported their psychological anguish over Trump's election. Specifically, that most Democrats partook in reverse cheerleading or over-reporting negative sentiments in part to show support for their fellow Democrats. They were faking it. Fake news. Fake mental stress.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.